Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where Pikachu, I choose you, more like Streakachu, I choose you, because the Lakers are Pika-ing at just the right time, wouldn't you say? The Lakers are currently on their longest win streak of the season, having won 5 in a row. They are now 41-32 after going big game hunting the last two nights and beating the Bucks and the Grizzly Bears back-to-back, winning their second straight back-to-back set of the season, third overall. They have played 13 back-to-back sets up until this point of the NBA season. They have two left to close out the season. The Lakers are also 9 games above 500 for the first time since May 11th, 2021. And in the last three Lakers wins, there has been one member of their big three missing. D'Angelo Russell on Sunday, LeBron James on Tuesday, Anthony Davis on Wednesday, and yet the Lakers have won all three. It hasn't looked pretty. The team has still been a bit banged up, but the Lakers have remained resilient, locked in, and again, are Pika-ing at just the right time. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, I told you the Lakers were good.
You did tell me they were good.
So, we have Tommy via drive-by, drive-through recording today. Tommy, how is it feeling being a Lakers fan these days? The last two games have been quite the blur. How are you processing everything? Because this season, it is truly one of those, it was the best of times, worst of times kind of season. We've seen and felt some of the lowest of lows, but also some of the highest of highs. And for me, I have been able to ride the wave through it all because from my perspective, it was always less about the players and more about how they were being handled and utilized, and also just the injury bug affecting us on the margins this season. But literally this season, so unpredictable. It's been the most frustrating season, but at the same time, also maybe the most vindicating season in some senses based off of some of our takes very early on. But yeah, Tommy, you know, with the insane Bucks win and then the Lakers taking care of business the next night without Anthony Davis against the Grizzlies and them now riding this 5-game win streak, yeah, how are you feeling as a Lakers fan right now as the Lakers aim to try and get the 8th seed or even better than that?
I think for now, I'm staying cautiously optimistic. This team has been up and down all year, right? So I think like the key fact here is there's like a couple key facts. One, we're riding a 5-game win streak, longest win streak of the season. I did not think this team was capable of stringing together more than like 3 wins. So that's pretty impressive. Second fact is that Bucks game was physically and emotionally, you know, draining for this group. And to win that game and come back on the second night of a back-to-back against a, like, much lesser opponent. That's the type of opponent, by the way, that, like, our team has had all season has had letdown games against, right? Mm-hmm. And to come in and, like, pretty handily win it. I mean, yeah, that's basketball's a game of runs, so it got obnoxiously close at times, but it never truly felt to me anyway, that we were going to just let it go away. And so, and even then, like, right, it's like people remember the 2019-2020 like championship season and how good our record was and we were first in the West. People probably don't remember at this point that we also led the NBA in comeback wins. Like, good teams don't win wire to wire by double digits every single night. That's just not how the NBA works. So it's like, even in these games against lesser opponents, it's like, I don't care how big of a run you let the other team on, but it's how in control were you? And this team has just felt in control of all of these games, right? Like, even the Milwaukee game, it's like hanging around, and then making a push. I think, you know, another reason for my cautious optimism is the way that this team seems to perform in like close games. That's been a consistent theme all season. And something that's very different than, you know, the last season and a half or so that we had Russ, where it seemed like every time a game was close, unless we had a 15-point cushion going into the final 3 minutes, we were probably going to lose. Like, that's what it sort of felt like for that season and a half. And it's like the opposite now. Now it sort of feels like if we're in the vicinity, like, you just don't know what D'Lo and Austin and LeBron and these guys can do in crunch time. They've all been like pretty clutch at times. So I think I'm cautiously optimistic for now. I'm curious to see how the rest of the road trip goes, and curious to see how locked in this team is, like, in terms of understanding seeding and what they have to do. Like, if you look at our last 9 games, as of the time we're recording this, I think we have 9 or maybe 8 games left, and it's pretty road heavy. Are we going to be able to band together? You know, there's like an obnoxious, I think we have like 3 back-to-backs somehow, like in this last like little stretch here. Are we going to be able to continue this momentum? I don't know. Right. So that's like where this team has cut it off at multiple points earlier this season. Like, it felt like we were getting really good momentum coming out of the in-season tournament. And then, like, you know, right after that, it's like we go on a losing streak and have our worst month of the season. So, you know, I don't want to get too optimistic yet, but the reality is the last 2 months of the season, the last 2 months, the Lakers are winning about 70% of their games. That would be, you know, among the top 2 or so teams in the West. Not over that stretch, like, that's the percentage that, like, the Nuggets win, right? So, this team can clearly hang. You know, it's not like, oh, we just hit a 2-month like soft stretch of our schedule. Like, we lost a lot of stupid games earlier in the season that we all remember. So it's just like, I know, yeah, it's not the full sample size, but over a 25% to 30% sample of the season, which is pretty significant, we're among the best teams in the league. And that's, by the way, playing through injuries. Like you mentioned, you know, each of the last 3, we've lost, you've been without one of our top 3 guys, but you know, we've been without Vanderbilt for most of that time. We've been without Gabe Vincent, obviously, that entire time. Christian Wood, we've been without for most of that time. These are not like our top 5 guys, but these are like, with the exception of Wood, who's sort of in and out, like Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent were supposed to be like core rotation players for us this season. And they're being replaced by like the likes of, you know, Cam Reddish, who's not quite the same caliber, right? So anyway, it's pretty impressive. And I think, like, you know, to your point about it being super, super vindicating, this is a team that we were really excited about. And I think the last 2 months has shown everybody why we were so excited.
Yeah. And you can be cautiously optimistic because when the coach has played his best players and the best lineups, the Lakers are winning at a 70% win rate and pace, right? In the games that Rui Hachimura has started, the Lakers are 20-10. Tommy, in the games in which D'Angelo Russell has started, the Lakers are 36-24. That's a winning team. It's just there was a bunch of weird muck in the middle that we won't relitigate at this point right now because there's too much to talk about, and we're going to get into the Bucks game. We're going to get into Anthony Davis's dominant play. But yeah, really quickly, I mean, look, this just shows you, like, the last week or so, I mean, the last month or so, we have seen how talented this group of guys are. And the individuals on this team, the ceilings that they can reach. Like, here are some crazy player stats. Rui Hachimura just had a career-high 14 rebounds against the Bucks on Tuesday, right? He followed that up by getting a career-high 7 threes versus Memphis last night. That was also, he also had 32 points and 10 rebounds. That was the first time in his career that he's had back-to-back double-double games, double-digit rebound games. Okay? Rui Hachimura. Yeah. Austin Reeves. He recorded his second triple-double of his career versus Milwaukee while playing defense on Chris Middleton and Damian Lillard and hitting, like, the clutchest shot of the game.
Yeah.
The next night, he follows that up with 11 assists again, back-to-back double-digit assist games. So AR has a triple-double one night. The next night, LeBron just has the most casual triple-double against the Grizzlies. Meanwhile, against the Bucks, both D'Angelo Russell and Austin Reeves record 29-point 10-plus assist games. That is almost assuredly, I haven't fact-checked this, but that is almost assuredly the first pair/duo of LeBron James' tenure that have put up those numbers in the LeBron James-Anthony Davis era. Wouldn't you say? 29 points and 10-plus assists?
Like, oh, yeah, for sure.
This is the group that we have. It's just unfortunate that injuries, galaxy brain coaching, bad lineups have kind of made things so messy and mucky in the middle portions of it. But it looks like we have turned the tide and righted the ship just in time. For example, well, Tom, I have a question for you. How do you feel about being right?
I enjoy that feeling.
You enjoy that feeling? Great, because, you know, I mean, we're not right all the time. We get a lot of things wrong. I think my most famous wrong take in recent days is kind of being okay with the Lakers letting Alex Caruso go for THT. Oh, man, that was a terrible take on my part. So there's one instance of me being terribly wrong. But when it comes to this season, Tommy, we have been terribly right, it seems. So at the beginning of the season, we were right about being intrigued about Rui Hachimura starting at the three for this Lakers team, right? We predicted that was the, I think that was both of our starting lineups that we wanted to begin the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we predicted that starting lineup because we just said, even though Vanderbilt is such a defensive menace, Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis, there's an argument to be made of just starting your five most talented, well-rounded players, and those are the guys. Well, guess what, Tommy? This is more due to injury because Vanderbilt's been out, but look, again, as I mentioned, the Lakers are 20-10 when Rui Hachimura starts. We were also right about D'Angelo Russell being good and being the third best player on the team. Could you imagine that? Also, Tommy, the last thing we were very right about. We were right about Taurean Prince doing Taurean Prince things, regardless of whether he plays 15 minutes, 22 minutes, or 30 minutes, and how he should only be playing 15 minutes. And lo and behold, Taurean Prince is actually playing better, Tommy, in 15 minutes, 15 to 18 minutes a night in recent games. But anyways, let's talk about the Milwaukee Bucks game, Tommy. Okay, quick Memphis game thoughts. LeBron James, casual triple-double in his return. He seemed pretty locked in. He seemed ready to right the ship. The Rui Rampage, 32 points. He is the second non-LeBron, non-AD Laker outside of D'Angelo Russell to have multiple 30-point games this season, which is crazy. As I mentioned, Austin Reeves, back-to-back double-digit assist games. D'Angelo Russell, he had another like three threes in a row in the third quarter. Back-to-back five-plus three-pointer games in a row. The Lakers did what they needed to do in the Memphis Grizzlies game, and you mentioned why it was so impressive, even in spite of the lapses within that game. The Milwaukee Bucks game. Where do you have that ranking in your... I mean, we have a lot of these games at this point now in this season of like... best Laker games of the year with regards to the Golden State Warriors double OT game in Golden State, the LeBron-less, AD-less, Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell-led Lakers against the Boston Celtics at the Boston Garden. We had the Clippers comeback where LeBron goes crazy and D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura chip in at the end. Where do you have this Bucks game ranking in that lineup? Because I feel like it was the most maybe improbable Lakers win. The Clippers comeback was crazy. That was improbable, but I believe everybody was healthy. All of our top guys were healthy for that game. And the Bucks game, the way it started, we scored a season low 16 points in the first quarter. We were down by 19 at one point in the fourth quarter, and we had no LeBron James throughout that entire game. And AD got banged up all of a sudden, like halfway through the fourth quarter. And so for me, for the Lakers to pull that game out of their ass and go two extra overtimes, and the way that it happened with so many guys stepping up, it was a little bit reminiscent of the Clippers game where you had all of these different characters going on their own individual runs to eventually culminate in a Lakers win. I mean, yeah, D'Angelo Russell going crazy on another crazy heater in the third quarter after having a very poor first half offensively. You had Austin Reeves playing defense, playing on both ends, stopping Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton. You had Anthony Davis, pretty much the MVP of the game, stifling Giannis and Dame in both of those overtimes with a banged up knee. You had the Rui overtime takeover where he was benched for much of the fourth and then Darvin Ham thankfully brought him back in. Rui hits two clutch buckets, gets two offensive rebounds. He's battling with Giannis in the paint. He's battling with Chris Middleton. You even had Spencer Dinwiddie clutch overtime Leroy Jenkins three, his only field goal, giving the Lakers their first lead. And then collectively, the Lakers hit 12 of 12 from the free throw line in under a minute and a half in the fourth quarter and both overtimes. So before we get into the individual players, like, how are you feeling after watching that Bucks 19-point comeback game, it going to double overtime, you seeing AD sort of hobbled again, a little bit reminiscent of the first Bucks game that we had, but you watched this, I mean, you watch every game in DVR, but like, how are you feeling as you are rewatching the playback of that epic Milwaukee Bucks game?
Yeah, for me, given all of the context, which you just kind of went over, I think like that was probably I would pick that as the biggest win of the season. The Clippers game was really fun. But you know, the Clippers have sort of been like, I don't want to say like the Clippers have been not great, right? The last couple months. So maybe they were trending in that direction, right? It's like the Warriors are like, I think I saw like Harrison Fagan or something describe the Warriors season as like the Lakers season in a different font. And I'm like, yeah, that's like pretty accurate. Like they're kind of a mess and have been like sort of in the same ways that we are. Like they could win any game. They could beat any team by 30 points and lose to literally any team by 30 points. So it's like, you know, you have an epic game against them. It's like, I don't know, maybe, you know, that's maybe not as impressive with the wild stats that you see after a game like that. Here's the thing about this Bucks game, okay? And this is similar to that Clippers game that we talked about a few weeks ago, where, you know, I think I mentioned my story of watching that game was, you know, I got to the fourth quarter. I didn't really think anything was going to happen. I didn't want to waste my time. Oh yeah, I did come back from Disneyland that day. You know, like I was like, whatever. Let me just like kind of fast forward. You know, make sure this is like going to be a comfortable loss in the fourth, and then I don't have to finish it. And then they started chipping away, and I had to stop it. This one was even crazier than that. Okay, and it's like you mentioned, they were down 19 at some point.
Like 6 minutes in the fourth.
Yeah. It was like 6 minutes and 50 seconds left in the fourth. They were down by 19 points against like. And like, again, I watched that game fully expecting probably like most of us, right, that we were going to lose that. Not just because LeBron wasn't playing, but sort of because how the last Bucks game went and, you know, Middleton didn't play in that one and Middleton was back. And, you know, it's the last 10 games for everyone. Like maybe Denver is not more concerned about ramping up, but most other contenders are like, this is the time to ramp it up, you know, for the playoffs. So especially the Bucks, who were like playing with a new coach. And anyway, for all of that, I was like, no LeBron on the road, first game of a road trip, a long road trip with some winnable games coming up, by the way. So like everything about this game just sort of screamed, it's not going to happen. And, you know, you mentioned the really, really bad first quarter, but we hung around, you know, there was other times, second, third quarter, it's like, it felt like we were being like dramatically outplayed. And then you would look and it's like, ah, we're down 10. I don't know. And then when the Bucks went on that run, you're like, okay, that's it. They're going to roll over. But they just, again, they kept chipping away. They got it down to five, right? Around the 3.5 minute mark, Milwaukee makes a little mini run and takes a lead back up to double digits. Again, at that point, James is not there to save you. So what's going to happen? You figure they're probably just going to roll over. It was like a valiant effort. and like one of our patented fake comebacks, right? And then, but again, guys stepped up. AD hit a clutch three with a minute left. Guys hit clutch free throws. D'Lo was, you know, I thought a lot more assertive down the stretch. The results for him individually were not necessarily the same as what he did in the last Bucks game, where he just like went off and had like almost a career type of game, like certainly with his fourth quarter performance. But, you know, he was still like trying. He's the one who got fouled, who got us into the first overtime, right?
Yeah, he drove it to the paint. Yeah.
Yeah. So the combination, right, of like all of these things, like D'Lo's performance, Austin's performance, just hitting like crazy clutch threes, logo threes with like a minute left to like get it to within two. And it was just like everybody was playing at such a high level and they refused to back down. And There were so many moments, right? And you've seen it over the course of the season with this group. But like, especially, you know, we're entering the end of the season. It feels like no matter how many wins we get, I think I sent you a text last night that said at some point we were 19-21 and we were in 10th place. And after that point, we've gone 22-11 and we only moved from 10th to 9th place, which is crazy, right? Which is super, super rough. And so, you know, we can't seem to make ground. Like, you know, again, all these factors sort of pointing to, you could sort of see this group just resigning itself to saying, okay, whatever, I guess we're a 9 seed. And no, these guys just, they wouldn't quit, and they kept at it. They played really good defense in that game, by the way. It's like, for a double overtime game, like, I thought, like, the contesting on Milwaukee's shots, and I mean, the contesting on the perimeter has been so much better just like in the last week, or which is unsurprisingly correlated with our 5-game win streak, maybe. But yeah, to me, it was just like a combination of all of these factors. You could even argue, like, in the other games that LeBron has sat out, it's like maybe teams take their foot off the gas when LeBron's out. I just didn't get the sense that Milwaukee was taking their foot off the gas for this one. I think they really, really, really wanted to win this game, and we just beat them. So,
yeah, I mean, we're going to get to the individual players in just a second, but I mean, right on down the line, it was so impressive because, like, Austin Reeves, at a certain point in the third quarter when he was turning the ball over, and he was put in such an awkward position again where he was the only ball handler on the floor with Anthony Davis, Jackson Hayes, Cam Reddish, and Torian Prince. And he's, like, fumbling the ball all over the place, passing it to people's feet. And I'm like, this guy looks tired. How Austin Reeves was able to summon that second wind in the fourth quarter, and I think he mentioned it post-game himself, that he actually felt better as the game went on longer, which is crazy because he looked gassed to me and his legs looked fried. But the fact that, I don't know, he summoned something in the fourth quarter and all of a sudden he started attacking really quickly into the paint and getting these like layups and stuff. I'm not even talking about the last three he hit, but in the fourth quarter to help fuel that comeback, he was just attacking quickly in early transition opportunities and taking it straight to the rack. And I'm like, how do you have the legs for this, dude? So this is a good way to transition into Anthony Davis and his dominance, because I feel like this Bucks game, Tommy, is Anthony Davis's flu game with regards to the regular season, because the dude hyperextended his knee. I think Chris Middleton did it to him. He was playing on one knee, and unlike the first Bucks game when he was playing with one arm and was essentially just a decoy, letting D'Angelo Russell do all the heavy lifting offensively, in this game, Anthony Davis had to play, I think, like 5 more minutes of the fourth quarter and then 2 overtimes. And he wasn't just a decoy, dude. He was like bombing threes, getting offensive rebounds, blocking the hell out of Damian Lillard to send things into overtime. He was stifling Giannis in the paint. The fact that he was doing all of that on one knee, it's unfathomable. And he ended the game with, what did he have? 34 points and 23 rebounds, 4 blocks. So the run that Anthony Davis is on right now, he has had 4 straight 22-plus point 15-plus rebound games, 2 straight 30-plus point 16-plus rebound games. He's had now 4 straight games with at least 1 three-pointer. Congratulations, Anthony Davis, for being the Western Conference Player of the Week last week. Much deserved. And I don't know, what have your thoughts been on Anthony Davis this last week? Like, this is his best stretch of Lakers basketball, and there's no coincidence that the Lakers are on this five-game win streak off of his back, because look, 22 points, 15 rebounds, 6 assists, 23 points, 19 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 blocks, 36-16, 34-23 against the Bucks. Banged up, but doing it on both ends, and he has this knack now, Tommy, of just like throwing the ball up, missing it on purpose. I don't know if he's missing it on purpose, but it seems like he's just lobbing it to himself and hammering down these insane one-handed sledgehammer putbacks. But I don't know. This is the best Anthony Davis we've seen this season. And yeah, what have your thoughts been on his dominance?
Yeah, you get the sense that AD is, I mean, he recognizes what time is coming and he's clearly ramped it up, right? I think over the course of the last couple of months, we've seen him become more integrated offensively and become more of a focal point of what we're trying to do offensively. And so that part, I think, has just been sort of a natural progression over the course of the season, like him getting more confidence in those spots and knowing where he's going to get the ball and et cetera, et cetera. Like, when was the last time we had a conversation about like, AD just scored 30 and now he has 4 points because he only took 2 shots. Like, how do we get him more looks? Like, it felt like even during the championship year, that was a constant discourse, right? How are we going to get 80 looks? And now it's not even a question. It's just like, he's constantly, it feels like he has the ball in his hands. But I feel like on the defensive end and rebounding wise, like, he clearly has ramped it up several notches there, right? And attacking the glass to go get the rebounds and not just picking up what's in front of you. And obviously, you know, even more engaged than normal defensively. So yeah, he's playing MVP type basketball. He's certainly playing all NBA basketball. It's a shame the team's record is so bad, because I feel like it's hiding how close this guy is to having like a real MVP type of season.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, I agree with you. And I believe he had his career Lakers career high in field goal attempts versus the Bucks. So huge props to Anthony Davis. Hopefully his knee is feeling better, because we're going to need him against the Indiana Pacers on Friday in Indiana. Why don't we take it to break here? When we return, let's talk about Austin Reaves, D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, and Spencer Dinwiddie. So we will catch you guys after the break.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we are back. Really quickly want to remind you guys to please rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app, and also give us a 5-star thumb tap on the Spotify app as well. Tommy cannot read our review of the day for us today because he's driving down the 110 currently, and that would suck if I asked him to channel Darvin Ham as he was driving on the freeway. Bad things might happen. So I will do the reading for today, Tommy. Are you ready?
Yeah.
This one comes from iCentaur.com. I'm going to try and channel Chris Gent, okay? So here I go, Chris Gent. I don't know if anybody knows how Chris Gent sounds like, but here we go. iCentaur.com, the title to this review is Lakers Legacy, 5 stars. No egomaniacs or silly bantering, just solid Lakers fan talk. Step and repeat. 5 stars. Boom, there it is. Thank you, iCentaur.com. I don't know about the no silly bantering part, but sure. I appreciate the 5-star review. Tommy, how did you think I did with that Chris Gent impression?
I thought it was pretty spot on.
I am no Tommy Alexander, but I appreciate it coming from you. All right, let's get on with the rest of the show. Again, please rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app. Tommy, Austin Reaves, his... I mentioned it on Twitter, but I mean, we can talk about the crazy layups, the whirling dervish in the lane, like his clutch 3-point shot that he hit, the clutch free throws that he hit down the stretch. But to me, the most impressive part about, you know, his Bucks game was just his defense and hounding Damian Lillard. He got a couple blocks on Lillard, getting switched on to Chris Middleton and playing solid defense on Middleton as well. And this has been like a, he's been doing this for about like a week or two now, because he was doing this against Maxey and the Sixers. Like, Austin Reaves has been hauling ass. He's been getting physical and grimy. His Austin Reaves rookie year grittiness is back. His two-way play. And he's even had, as I mentioned, two double-digit assist games in a row. So his playmaking prowess is there in the right context. But yeah, what have your thoughts been on Austin Reaves recently, and, you know, what he did in the Bucks game? It's clear that, you know, he's a bit of a frenetic, wild slash messy playmaker who thrives in chaos, loose ball situations, transition, thrives when there's set plays laid out for him. That's when he really looks very Manu-esque. I don't like it when he drives into traffic and leaves his feet. His handles get kind of loose and his passes always get deflected. But if you put Austin Reaves in the right context, that's when you really see his creativity as a playmaker. But yeah, what have your thoughts been on Austin Reaves? Because to me, the defining thing has been, oh, we're getting him, Austin, but we're also getting the connector Austin back, and we're seeing both of them fuse together recently.
Yeah. I think, you know, Austin's season has been interesting, because when it started, I think so many people, including me, by the way, like, thought that, you know, not necessarily it was a flash in the pan, or he wasn't actually that good, or the stats were misleading, but just sort of thought like he clearly hit some sort of wall and maybe he hasn't like progressed. And it started to feel like at points like this was just going to be a throwaway season. Like, he was shooting 31%, I think, in December from three, or January from three. And it didn't look like he was going to get there. The playmaking was sloppy. But, and again, it's hard to know how much of this has just been like, although we still have injuries, we've had a group of 10 guys or so who have been able to play together. So how much of this is just those guys finding chemistry? How much is just playing Austin with better players? You know, how much is that helping? Like, it's hard to know, but I think he's made the steps. Like, he's improved as a playmaker over the course of the season. There's no doubt about that. And he's significantly improved as a defender, which, that's sort of how he made his mark. I mean, on the roster, right? As like a scrappy defensive guy with some like ball handling upside, basically. Like, you know, I think on that first season on the Russ roster, like, he led our team in charges taken as like a rookie, I'm pretty sure, right? So he, you know, it never seemed like he was fully Caruso. And like, I don't think anybody expected him to be, but it was like some combination of he can do some things defensively, but he can also do some things offensively. And, you know, you're kind of waiting to see what he develops into. But like, the defense this season had like gone away. He was one of the worst defenders in the NBA, actually, you know, statistically, for the first half of the season or so. But it does feel like that has been improved. And again, I don't know what it is, but it's like, why does it seem like he can move his feet laterally all of a sudden? You know, I don't know. Like, it just, you know, he is holding his own, like, guarding Damian Lillard on the perimeter. I'm like, okay, Dame is 34, but like, there are a lot of very good defensive players that struggle to keep up with him on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. So it's been, I don't have a good explanation for why that's changed, but it's been really nice to see that he's come around on that end. And he's just been like such a well-rounded player, right? I think there was like a long time, and I haven't changed my view on this per se, but like, you know, where I just sort of accepted like, okay, Austin and D'Lo are both really good. There's not a chance they're going to be able to play significant minutes together because we need somebody more defensive minded. But I still mostly think that our ideal lineups are like, you know, our big three, including D'Lo, and then two more defensive minded guys, but who can guard on the perimeter and have length. But, you know, Austin, his improvement on defense is certainly helping. And it kind of puts us into a situation where we can use our defensive specialists as specialists and not as starters, which is nice.
Yeah, I don't have an explanation for it either. It's just he has this supernatural second wind all of a sudden towards the tail end of this season that he's channeling to just get more physical and grimy again, which is crazy because, again, sometimes I feel like it affects his offense and his decision-making, but against the Bucks, it was just like that dude was running on fumes, but like the good version of that, you know? So welcome back, Austin Reaves. He is him. Quickly on D'Angelo Russell. So the Bucks game, I felt like it was also a nice encapsulation of D'Angelo Russell's season. it's crazy how easily you can tell who is a D'Angelo Russell skeptic and who always views him under a guilty till proven innocent light, because they will see a game like the Milwaukee Bucks game from D'Lo and be like, welcome to the D'Angelo Russell experience, where he doesn't do anything in the first half and all of a sudden he gets hot, right? And that's him. You just got to ride the roller coaster wave. And I just don't see, Tommy, how you can paint that game for D'Angelo Russell in a negative light, because if anything, prior situations with D'Angelo Russell, we would always bemoan the fact that he always relied on his hot shooting to start games to carry him through the rest of the game, right? And if he didn't have a hot start or started out 1-for-7, he'd probably just wither away. But this season in particular, D'Angelo Russell has shown, I'm ready to rewrite that narrative. And the Bucks game was a perfect encapsulation of that. Started off 1-for-7 in the first half, had a much better second quarter where he had like 5 assists and was really wheeling and dealing to get the Lakers' deficit down to 5. Unfortunately, the Lakers relinquished that and went down 16 by the first by the end of the first half. But second half, he was like, you know what? I just roasted this Bucks team like a week ago. Let me come out guns blazing. And that's exactly what he did in the third quarter, hitting 4 threes in a row again. And then in the fourth quarter, you know, in the fourth quarter, when we were down 19 due to some of his careless turnovers, guess what he did, Tommy? He said, I'm going to keep shooting. That's when he hit that floater. That's when he hit that three-point shot to cut it down to 12. And he actually helped ignite our final push, you know? And then throughout that whole overtime period, he was still trying to attack, trying to draw fouls, and he hit some of the clutchest free throws of the night. He was 4-of-4 in clutch time. And for me, I look at D'Angelo Russell's Bucks game and I say, wow, look how much D'Angelo Russell has grown to the point where he can have a shitty first half like that and still be relentless in pushing through that and winding up with a very good game. He wound up with 29 points and 10 assists and 7 rebounds, okay? Not the least of which, Tommy, congrats to D'Angelo Russell for being the greatest single-season three-point shooter in Lakers history. We haven't mentioned that yet on this podcast. 197 three-pointers made to this point. He is 3 threes away from hitting 200 for just the second time of his career. He first hit 200 threes in a season with the Brooklyn Nets during his All-Star season. I believe he had 234 threes that year. He is also 3 threes away from passing Kyle Kuzma as the 7th all-time in career three-pointers made as a Laker. In 2024, Tommy, D'Angelo Russell is shooting like 44.6% from 3. That is better than Damian Lillard, Terry Rozier, and Kobe White's overall field goal percentage for the year. That's crazy. But yeah, what are your thoughts? Really quickly, we've talked about D'Angelo Russell a lot, but your thoughts on D'Angelo Russell's resilience in that Bucks game and then also the Grizzlies game, going on a heater once again. I just find it very funny and ironic at this point that this guy went from his starting spot is going to Gabe Vincent to now just taking D'Angelo Russell for granted, where he can have 5 threes in a game and we're like, oh yeah, D'Angelo Russell does that.
Yeah, so I sort of alluded to this when I was talking about the Bucks game overall, but like D'Lo had stretches in that game where the shots weren't falling and he wasn't able to get he wasn't able to get his looks to go down. Now, the problem that D'Lo has, at least with respect to picky Laker fans, is If that's it, if he reacts to that and says, okay, it's not me tonight, I'm going to back off, then it's like he gets the critique that he faded into the shadows because he was having an off shooting night. But then like if he tries to push through it, it's like he gets the critique that like, well, look at his percentages at the end of the game. Now, here's the thing, like these guys, like none of us are trying to suggest that anyone outside of LeBron and AD on this roster are like all NBA guys, or certainly not perennial all NBA guys, right? And those are the guys who were consistent every night. Every other guy is just a really, really good role player. Like Austin's a really good role player. Like, you know, there is something in between, like you're an all-star and you're the worst player in the NBA. So a lot of those guys, the reason that they're not all-stars is because they have some inconsistencies over a course of a season or game to game or in a road game or, you know, whatever. And so D'Lo is not going to shoot like lights out from three or, you know, lights out every single night. And so
he is this season.
Well, except for this season, but, you know, surrounded by really good shooting games. He has one mediocre shooting game against the Bucks. So to me, and to your point about the growth and resilience, like, it means so much more to me that in that circumstance, you know, his reaction was to continue at it and end up putting together a really, you know, solid game. Like you mentioned, the free throws, like when D'Lo was getting fouled, like we were losing, right? Like at like end of regulation, like there's 3 seconds left. Jay Crowder is talking smack to this dude on the line. He had been playing, like he had been missing shots. He had a couple turnovers. Like, it's not like he was playing amazingly. Like, I'm white hot right now. Anything I throw up is going to go in. And he like comfortably sank those free throws, and he sank other ones in overtime as well. Yeah. So like that, it's a small thing maybe, but like, those are the things that I look at this season. And it's like, that's all you can really ask for, dude. Like, D'Lo's been in the league for 9 years. Like, a lot of guys, that's who they are at that point. And everybody came into the season saying, I know who D'Lo is. And so because of that, like, you get the self-selection bias where every time he has a bad game, those people emerge out of the woodwork, right? But so many people had decided that they know who D'Lo is, and it's so rare for a guy this at this stage in his career to change. And I think they're just unwilling to accept evidence that there has been change. I mean, the numbers that this guy has been putting up this season,
they're unreal.
They're unreal. And it's like what we've been praying for. Like, we've been like, we wanted to trade first round picks to get Terry Rozier, you know? And like, D'Lo is so much better than that right now. And not only, you know, that we have the ability to potentially keep him. And I think we'll still be able to keep him at a below market value because, like, notwithstanding all of his success this season, people still have skepticism towards this guy, right? Absolutely. So it's like, you know, I can't say enough good things about him. It's been so nice and gratifying to watch. Like, we've said this a few times, like, how we've sort of come full circle as fans with respect to D'Lo, because we started this podcast around the time he was, or it might have been the year he was drafted. I can't remember.
It was.
But so, you know, we were, you know, that was among the first years that you and I spent like a lot of time watching college ball and trying to figure out who we were going to, you know, take with this pick, that it was going to be the highest pick the Lakers have had since James Worthy, or, you know, whatever. And we were so excited about D'Lo back then, and to see the development into what he's sort of become now. I mean, this is like the best version of sort of what we could have projected at that point. And for some reason, people still, like, you were rattling off those stats about what D'Lo and Austin have done as like a duo next to LeBron, and what those guys have done individually next to LeBron. And it's like, these are numbers that people would like laugh at if they saw before the season, because they would just think like we were so crazy to like make something up like that, right?
Yeah.
And now these guys are doing this, and everyone for some reason is just like pretending that it's not that big of a deal. And I'm just like, how is this happening? You know what I mean? Like, this dude is like doing things that none of us could have predicted. And I don't know, you get the idea, but
yeah.
D'Lo has just been amazing this year.
Yeah, he's spoiling us in the best way possible, because yeah, 18 points and 4 threes for D'Lo is a ho-hum night now. You know, that wasn't the case just 4 months ago when people were actually excited that D'Lo got injured during that random stretch, right? Because he was slumping in December. And even to this point, you know, it's crazy to me just how powerful perception is, because, you know, I mean, rightfully so, right? There is some credence to the fact that, yes, D'Angelo Russell falters in the playoffs. He faltered in the Western Conference Finals, yada, yada. But I think people take that too far and make that the blanket statement on D'Angelo Russell's career by saying, you know, D'Angelo Russell, I just don't trust him in clutch time. Austin Reeves, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, even Rui Hachimura, I trust them. And Tommy, I'm like, what? Have you not seen D'Angelo Russell with the Timberwolves or like the Nets? He historically has one of the best field goal percentages in the clutch. And I even threw it out on Twitter. I was like, do you know who the best three-point shooter in the clutch is this season for the Lakers? It's D'Angelo Russell. He's 6 of 15, 40% from three-point land in the clutch. Austin Reeves is second, 7 for 22. LeBron James is third, 7 of 24 or 23. None of those people who are saying, I just don't trust D'Angelo Russell, wouldn't even think that that's a real stat, you know? But again, that is just the perception that surrounds this guy. And I have enjoyed watching him slay every single one of those bad narratives and recency bias perceptions of him every step along the way, and hope he continues to do so, because guess what's right around the corner? The playoffs, the first round, second round, the Western Conference Finals, if we get there. All right, let's move on, Tommy, to the Black Samurai, who I now like to call the Black Shogun, because he has just been on another level recently. Obviously, he had his first back-to-back double-double of his career, back-to-back double-double games of his career. Career-high 7 three-pointers last night, 7 of 8. He only missed one three-pointer. Versus the Bucks, career-high 14 rebounds. When LeBron doesn't play, Tommy, Rui averages 16-5 on great percentages. In the month of March, Rui is averaging 17-5 on great percentages. When Rui plays 30 plus minutes, he averages 17-5 on great percentages. So to me, that sounds like a very good and very consistent role player who, whenever he gets consistent minutes in a defined role, is one of the best, most physically imposing, yet skilled role-playing forwards you could ask for as a fourth or fifth guy on any team. So your thoughts on Rui Hachimura?
Yeah, Rui, again, he's sort of in so many ways similar to D'Lo, and it's crazy because he's getting paid like nearly the same amount as D'Lo's getting paid this season, but for some reason nobody holds him. Yeah, it's like we don't hold him to the same standard for some reason, or, you know, or at least some fans don't seem to, but... You know, Rui is the same thing. Like, we got all this, like, preseason hype. Like, we got the long-term commitment, first of all, from Rob in the front office. And, by the way, it was a significant financial commitment. Like, it was in line with what market, you know, bigger wings like him have been getting. But it was a significant financial commitment for a team that, like, 2 years ago wasn't giving anyone more than a one-year deal. I mean, they gave this guy 3 years, $51 million, fully guaranteed. And we went from that to, you know, okay, up and down start, fine. He's dealing with some injuries, fine. He still, like, looked pretty strong in the preseason. He looked efficient. He still looks strong in even those November games when he was, like, in and out of the lineup. He looked pretty strong. But then it just, like, we neutered this guy so much, right, for so much of this season. Like, how many times did we get on, like, do one of these podcasts and talk about how Rui only played 15 minutes or Rui only got 17 minutes in this game? And it's like, how is it the case that one of our best players is only playing 17 minutes? And it's like, Lakers fans just, for some reason, always do this and, like, they felt the need to, like, put ourselves through this, like, gaslighting exercise where we all pretend, like... We're not, you know, like, we don't have eyes and we can't see that Rui is playing 17 minutes while Cam Reddish is playing 35 minutes. And, like, we just pretend that that's not the reason we're losing. Like, it's just because Rui's not good, because if he's good, he would have played more. And so, like, this becomes the frustrating thing about being a Lakers fan at times, right? Like, a lot of Lakers fans don't watch the games. I think that becomes clear, like, because there, you know, there's so many Lakers fans out there, and so there's so many voices, you know, masquerading as Lakers fans who pretend to watch the games, who are just expressing terrible opinions constantly online, and Rui got sucked into that somehow. So it's like, you start this guy and we're one of the best teams in the NBA. How could that be, right? It's like one starting lineup, like one player difference. And it's like, no, Rui is actually just that good. Everyone, you know, told us when we said, why isn't Rui playing more? Oh, his shooting was a flash in the pan. No, he's shooting over 40% from three, you know, on decent volume, and, you know, volume continues to go higher when he gets the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like, Rui has improved, you know, just all his overall offensive game. He's not just, how are we going to get Rui going? Okay, well, it better be a spot up corner three, or he's going to catch it in the post. And otherwise, he doesn't really do a whole lot. He's just like a really well-rounded player now. And someone, I assume Phil Handy, right? Because Darvin was the smart, he would have started him earlier in the season. But, you know, clearly someone told him, when you're on the floor with LeBron and AD, there's going to be so much physical attention. Like, the opposing team's two most physical and biggest and longest players are going to be guarding those guys. So you're going to get option three. And in many cases, you are going to have a significant physical advantage over option three.
Yep.
And he has clearly, like, realized that in recent weeks and has just been aggressively exploiting it. And by the way, if you go and listen to, like, our preseason and early season podcast, we talked a lot about how one of the best things Rui did in the postseason was he wasn't like waiting around to see what was going to happen. If he got switched onto Steph Curry, if he got switched onto Ja Morant or like a smaller guy, that ball, like it was a turn and his head is down and he's going to the rim. And he was, you know, yamming it on people and he was doing all kinds of crazy things. And, you know, we said that like he has like this good ability to like recognize those types of mismatches and exploit them. And he was definitely doing that. And then all of a sudden we get to this season, he's never in a position to do that. It's like take a spot up three or go like stand over there on the side. And so, you know, again, I don't know what Rui's career long term looks like with the Lakers, just because of the, you know, the fact that we're building this roster on two guys who sort of play a similar position or similar roles as he does, at least offensively. But he is like, there are not that many, well, how old is he? Like 25? There are not 26. That many, like, you know, 26 year old, 6'8", super strong physical wings who can score this efficiently. And you just wonder like, what is this guy's upside if he just had like an unlimited, like, you know, green light to just do whatever he wanted. It just like the sky's the limit. So,
yeah,
you know, I think if we are lucky enough to keep him, I mean, he's guaranteed, right? But if we're lucky enough that Rob is not crazy and doesn't trade him, you know, and we keep him next season, I still want to see the defense continue to improve. But even there, right? It's like you saw it in the Bucks game when he feels like the odds are against him. It's like he's kind of similar to a lot of guys on our team in this way, I guess. When they feel like the odds are stacked against them and they're like the underdog, everybody rises up, right? And and you see it with Rui. It's like sometimes he's getting blown by the matchups you feel like he should be handling. And then sometimes he's like packing Giannis at the rim. So yeah. It like doesn't really make, but yeah, go ahead.
How does he come out of nowhere with 14 rebounds and 10 rebounds? That is something that we need to, that's like lightning in a bottle that we need to capture. He can do that more consistently, you know?
Right.
Like that's the next evolution for Rui Hachimura. But look, Tommy, really quickly, the Lakers averages during this 5-game win streak, Anthony Davis, 28.8 points, 18.3 rebounds, 3.8 assists, 2.5 blocks. LeBron James, 23.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, 9.3 assists. D'Angelo Russell, 23.3 points, 7.3 assists on 48% from three, hitting 5 threes a game. Austin Reeves, 18.6 points, 6.6 rebounds, 7.6 assists. Rui Hachimura, 17.6 points, 7.8 rebounds on 59% from the field and 52% from three. Those are fucking 2K numbers, okay?
I know.
And granted, it was a little staggered because guys were in and out. One of the big three were in and out during this 5-game win streak in the last three. But those are incredible numbers. That is our starting lineup, dude.
Yeah.
It's elite.
Yeah, it's like literally elite, okay? And when you rattle these numbers off, right, and this is like back to my point about there's a significant number of people hiding on this stuff who aren't actually watching the games. During the stretch that the Lakers have been the most hot and are putting up some of like the most like historically good offensive numbers, the entire league's average scoring has gone down. Okay. Like we've all seen all of these reports about how they're calling less fouls and, you know, all this and that. And the result of that, like a more physical style of play that the league is trying to impose, is that unsurprisingly scoring has gone down. Through this stretch, the Lakers are having like the statistically, like in their franchise history, like among the best offensive periods they've ever had. And that means a lot. So it's like, if you're not watching the games and you're just looking at these box scores, you're like, it's 2024, 153-135. That's not like real numbers. I can't take that seriously. Like the Lakers are doing this, like, there's nothing different about what's going on in the NBA this season. And if anything, defenses are allowed to do more than they have been in the last couple of years.
Right. And the last stat that I want to throw out there with regards to Rui, you made the connection between him and D'Lo and how similar they are. They're similar in a lot of ways, Tommy, not the least of which being that they are currently the only two Lakers on the team shooting 42% from three. If I had told you that at the beginning of the season, D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura will both be shooting 42% from three with only 9 games left in the season. How? I mean, I think we did our season predictions podcast and I said Rui's going to shoot 38% from three. That was my high watermark. He's shooting 42% and we only have 9 games left to go. He would need to go like, I don't know, 0 for 15 to hit 38% or something. I'm not good at math, but that is insane. So D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura are the only two Lakers shooting 42% from three. They are also the only two Lakers to have multiple games of being played 18 minutes or less in this current starting lineup. How does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense. And we, again, we were trying to say this all season and people tried to tell us, no, actually, it's not because Cam Reddish is playing more than most of those.
Wait, you're using the wrong guy. It's not Cam Reddish because the Lakers played their best ball of the season with Cam Reddish in the starting lineup. And I just put this on Twitter. It is the overall misutilization of this roster. And if anybody's the culprit here, it's Taurean Prince, who was averaging 32 minutes like halfway through the season. I know you're using Cam Reddish as a stand-in.
I'm just using it as a stand-in. Yeah. It's mostly to bring to light the fact that there's only so many minutes to be played. And if you need to divvy up 48 minutes between in one position, it can't be the case that Rui is getting 13 and the rest are going to like a minimum level signing.
Well, and it was the case that Rui Hachimura and D'Angelo Russell were played 18 minutes or less with the team, with them both being fully healthy through very significant stretches of the season. And to me, those are fireable offenses. But anyways, really quickly to close this show, Tommy, we have to talk about Spencer do whatever the team needs Witty, because he has done whatever the team has needed. In his first fill-in start for the Lakers when D'Angelo Russell was out, this dude goes out and puts up 26 points and 8 of 11 from the field and starts dunking all over the place. He had like 4 dunks that game. And then obviously in the Milwaukee Bucks game, has a poor shooting night but comes up big at the end with that clutch 3-point shot that I don't know if that was a great shot, but it was the first lead the Lakers had all night. But most impressive part about Spencer Dinwiddie, Tommy, is the fact that I think this guy is like a Bruce Brown KCP fusion. Like, his defense has been very, very impressive. And you saw that come to full light against the 76ers. And he was switching on to Tobias Harris, Kelly Oubre, Tyrese Maxey. It didn't matter who you were switching him onto. He was locking that dude down, you know? And yeah, in this 5-game win streak stretch, Spencer Dinwiddie is averaging 12.2 points, 2.4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 block, and 50% from 3, hitting 2 threes a game. Those stats may seem unremarkable to you, but what those stats don't show you are his tremendous perimeter defense, how sturdy he is on defense, his role malleability. It doesn't matter what spot you put him in. It doesn't matter whether you're giving him usage, not giving him usage, whether he has the ball in his hands or not. I mean, this dude is chameleoning his way into just being the perfect glue guy that this team needs. So your thoughts on Spencer Dinwiddie?
Yeah, to your point on him being like the perfect glue guy, like there are so many people on this roster. I mean, you can think of two right away. Christian Wood, Spencer Dinwiddie, two guys that for some reason people just like wrote off. Like, okay, don't bring in Christian Wood, he's going to be a locker room cancer. Don't bring in Spencer Dinwiddie, he's going to want his shots, and look at his shot selection, it's so bad.
I mean, we were one of those people. That's one of our concerns, yeah.
But to be clear, like, this roster now, with LeBron especially, I think there are, like, dynamics here, right, at play that, like, none of us are aware of. But it feels like these guys who end up coming to these LeBron teams, like, do so with an understanding, okay? And I think probably what took Christian Wood so long to like commit to us in the off season was the fact that we wouldn't tell him you can go out there and shoot 20 times a game. You know, Spencer Dinwiddie, like, same thing. Like, this guy is kind of playing for a contract at this point. The fact that he was able to come in here and throw all his stats in the garbage, basically, and just be like, I'm just going to be a star in my role is so impressive to me.
I remember playing the best defense of his life.
I mean, everybody knew he had the upside, right? Like, he wasn't known as like a horrific defender. I think he was known for being a little bit worse as a team defender than as like an individual defender, because he's got the size and he's got the athleticism to be a good defender. But when you're playing like with Dallas, who gives up like 190 points a game, like, I don't know, like, maybe defense is not something that was being stressed there, right? So it's hard to know, right, with all these guys coming from different situations. But I remember the first few weeks after, you know, having Spencer on our roster, like, you were getting messages that you were relaying to me from people being like, oh, Spencer, what a waste of a signing, what a waste of a roster spot, that should have gone to like such and such scrub.
Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah, Bismack Biyombo or some other unknown scrub that is sitting currently as the 15th man on someone's bench or like out of the league at this point, right? And we both said, like, no, it's actually like the fact that you got to look at the impact on the court. I don't care if this dude is shooting 30% on the season, if it's like he's taking two shots a game.
Yeah.
Like, he was doing other things. He was playmaking with a low turnover rate. He was playing defense. We all knew that eventually the offense would come. Okay, the offense is always going to come late because you're stepping into a team that has played 60 games together, 50 plus games together, and you know, you're used to playing a certain style. You've never played with LeBron. You've never played with AD, and now things are different. And so I think it took him a while to sort of find where he fit in this group. And then once he found that spot, it's like really unsurprising to me that he's just become the offensive player that like he's been pretty much his entire career.
Yeah. And isn't this the type of player that we were hoping to sign when we were ready to put our full mid-level exception towards Bruce Brown? I don't know how sustainable this defense is, but if it sustains in this 5-game stretch that we've seen from Spencer Dinwiddie, this is a better Bruce Brown, dude, because Bruce Brown can't shoot and playmake the way that Spencer can. But this is essentially the type of skill set we were looking for, right? When we were trying to nab Bruce Brown during the offseason. We got him for free, dude. It's Spencer Dinwiddie. And it almost poses a problem for us, Tommy. It's a good problem, but like the more and more Spencer continues to spoil us throughout however long this season lasts, I'm more and more asking myself, how are we going to replace this dude when he leaves? You know, like that's a problem, but it's a good one to have.
It's a good one to have. It is a problem that always comes up with these sorts of like lucky, you know, sort of midseason waiver guys that like, you know, nobody thought Spencer Dinwiddie was going to be waived. And we sort of fell ass backwards into signing him. Like, yeah, this is always the problem because we don't have money to keep this guy, but cross the bridge when it comes. But at least we've shown this guy that, right, like he has a role on this team. There's a place for him here. And if, you know, if he's willing to come back for, you know, we have the MLE, the smaller MLE this year. I don't know what's going to be available to us, but if it is, like, maybe he's not getting anything significantly higher and we take him and try to trade Gabe Vincent. But I think short term, like, assuming the path of least resistance, like, yeah, you just hope that, like, guys like Gabe Vincent step up next year and maybe we get some Max Christie, Maxwell Lewis, like those types of guys, like continue to develop. But yes, it is going to be very hard to like recreate this because it's working very, very well for us right now.
Yeah, but in a season that has been so injury riddled, not from our stars, but from the margin guys, Spencer Dinwiddie is exactly the shot and boost of upside that this team needed to glue together the fact that we're not sure if, you know, Christian Wood or Jared Vanderbilt are coming back. And even though Gabe Vincent is set to return, we're not sure how healthy any of these guys are going to be towards the end of the season. And Spencer Dinwiddie at least gives us a shot to make a run, you know, and he's proving that right now. And the Lakers have made their turn. They've put their foot on the gas pedal. They're hitting their stride right now at the right time, and hopefully they can close this road trip out with at least 2 or 3 more wins. Ideally, they just win out, but we'll see. It's going to be tough against Indiana. All I know is it's fun again. It's lit again to be a Lakers fan. We are literally playing our best basketball of the season, even though it's been uneven, but it has been uneven because of all the in and outs of guys coming in and out of the lineup and, you know, guys still being banged up, and the Lakers are still finding ways to win, which is the most impressive part. So that'll do it for this long episode. We will catch you guys next time. Hopefully the next time we catch you guys, the Lakers are still streaking and we have the 8th seed secured and are looking at the 7th seed, but we shall see. So anyways, we shall catch you guys next time. Tommy, I will see you later.
Peace.
Is it lit?
It's lit.
Oh, it's lit. All right, see ya.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.